Okay, I call the meeting of the Higher Education Finance and Policy Division to order. We do have a quorum. Would anyone, whoever's read the minutes, like to approve the minutes for April 8th?
Madam Chair, I move the approval of the minutes for the April 8th meeting.
Okay, so is there any discussion? Okay, hearing no discussion, Representative Womat moves to pass the minutes of April 8th, 2019. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. Okay, well, it's an exciting day in our committee. Brought some treats for our staff and members who have worked so hard on this. And I want to thank everybody's participation in bringing us to the point we are today. So we'll just get off to business, and we will start with the DE amendment, and let you all know that the author's amendment is what we discussed yesterday in the form that we totally discussed that nonpartisan research walked through for us. So I just we'll just get that amendment out. In fact, it is the A2 amendment is, no, excuse me, it's the A190412DE amendment. We'll move that one first. Okay. Okay, what's that? Okay, so first of all, we're going to do a little bit different. Just to let everyone know, we're marking up our DE amendment to the House File 2544 and voting on the amendments presented to the committee. We have 90 minutes to get through the agenda. I think we can do it. And I want everyone to have the opportunity to have amendments heard. Many of these we've discussed in committee. Some we have not. So I urge members to keep their comments brief and to the point prior to the vote so we can get through all of them and get voted on all of them. So we will start the... I will move my bill, House File 2544,
as amended, or not yet.
Okay, be referred to Ways and Means. Okay, now we have House File 2544 before us, and so I'd like to offer the amendment, the delete all amendment labeled A190412, and I will move that amendment. Okay, just one moment, please. Okay, so we do have an author's amendment to the DE-1901412 amendment, which we did talk about yesterday. It is labeled House File 2544A2. And I will move that author's amendment to put in the bill in the form that the author, would like it in. Is there any discussion? This gets it in the form that we talked about yesterday. Okay, is there any discussion? Okay, and seeing no discussion, I will renew my motion to adopt House File 2544A2 amendment. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Okay, so now we have House File, the A6th Amendment. And Representative Pryor, would you like to move that amendment and present it to the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A6th Amendment.
Okay, Representative Pryor moves the A6th Amendment. Would please... discuss the committee when you find it.
Yep, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. So you remember we did hear the bill where we're going to help campuses open up or set up mental health counselors, providers, that would be coming to campuses now. This doesn't change that in any way, but what it does specify is that that the this would not be supplanting the academic counselors that are already on campus. And so that's what this language does.
Okay.
And so the grants are designed to be built on the current support provided by faculty counselors and are not a replacement for them, is the gist of the language. And just to make that understanding clear. And it was discussed when the bill was introduced, but we're getting the final language in now. And the other body also has the same language.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just speak in support of this amendment as a faculty counselor who is in the Minnesota State system. We have found that fewer and fewer of the colleges hire faculty counselors, and I just did not want us to continue to diminish in rank, in the ranks, and want to make sure that we want to be able to supplement the work that faculty counselors do by providing some additional mental health support, and so I support this amendment.
Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm not familiar with the term faculty counselors. Is that that's something other than a counselor that serves the students, or does, I mean, who do they serve?
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Faculty counselors primarily just refer to the fact that we are faculty who work as counselors rather than advisors. So it's probably more to the system of Minnesota State. We have a number of academic advisors who are affiliated with the MAPE union, and we are, and the counselors who serve are faculty members within the academic part of the college. So that's what we're looking at, is just to identify it that way.
I see. And Madam Chair, so just to clarify, these are these folks who will be working with students regarding their debts and their loans, that kind of thing?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Poppy.
Thank you. Actually, faculty counselors or counselors who are faculty members at a Minnesota State College would be people who would work with students and deal with any sorts of issues. So it might be career counseling, it might be personal counseling, it might be academic counseling. So it's any variety of things that a student may have some issues around. It's not pertaining to specifics like the debt counseling or other things that we've maybe been hearing about. It's actually just to be a counselor who works with students.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, I will, Representative Pryor, would you like to renew your motion to adopt the
ACA? Yes, I would like to renew my motion.
Okay. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Pryor, you're again up with your A15 amendment.
Okay. All right, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'd like to move the A15 amendment. And briefly, this is in regards to the hunger-free campuses and the grants that could be awarded to campuses to qualify as a hunger-free campus, and it just puts an end date. And so instead of saying 3 years, it says July 1st, 2023. And this was on by the request of the student organization that's brought this forward to us.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Okay.
I will renew the motion to adopt the the H-2544-A15 amendment to the DE amendment.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. Okay, so now we are going to move to the Oh, wow. We have another one by Representative Fryer. It would be the A-10 amendment in your packets.
All right. This is it, Madam Chair.
Okay. And would you like to move your amendment to the DE amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'd like to move my amendment to the 2544DE amendment, and it's the H-2544A10 amendment.
Okay. Is there any did you want to discuss it?
This is just when we're talking about providing information about legal counseling to young people on campus that have experienced sexual assault, it just changes the words. It deletes legal advocacy to the words information about legal advocacy.
Is there discussion to this amendment? Seeing no discussion, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion to amend the
Here we go.
Thank you. And we are here. The H-2544A10 amendment to the DE amendment with the H-2544A10.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, the motion passes. Is adopted. Okay, Representative Lilly, we have your A-8 amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move that amendment.
Okay, so Representative Lilly made a motion to move the A-8 amendment onto the delete all amendment. Okay, Representative Lilly, would you like to discuss?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. Madam Chair and members, thank you for including this. This is the provision that was in there to start a visually impaired and blind teacher preparation program. And it's a smaller effort, but it's a very important little effort that's going forward. And just the folks that are receiving it just wanted me to say thank you. But this amendment itself, the A-8, is a technical amendment, and it is moving it to the Minnesota Higher Ed Department from specifically to the U, and that was at the U's request. But that's about all I know about it.
Okay. Is there any discussion to this amendment? Seeing no discussion, Representative Lilly will renew the motion to adopt the House File 2544A8 amendment to the DE amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Now we are on to the Representative Poppy's amendment, which is the A-1-0440 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this you will find on page 13 of the 0412 amendment. So I just wanted to so a couple of things. The $50,000 currently is given to the farm business management faculty at colleges who offer farm business management to develop and teach online ag courses, and an additional $175,000 was given initially as a pilot program to a Vets to Ag program, and that was initially given to the South Central campus, North Mankato campus, in order to be able to develop and encourage veterans to participate in agriculture and to learn more about it and to be able to have that as another opportunity for them when they're returning, and that they would be able to participate in agricultural programs. So what the amendment does is it kind of splits up those two funds a little bit differently, and instead it gives $160,000 each year, 2020 and 2021, would be given to the two-year Minnesota State Colleges that offer farm business management. And there are eight campuses that provide colleges that provide farm business management, so that they would be able to each get a piece of the pie in order to provide outreach, marketing, and promotion of agricultural programming with priority given to beginning farmers, veterans, communities of color, indigenous people, and women. And that is to kind of broaden the perspective a little bit. I know that certainly veterans are continue to be an important part of the outreach, but that we would broaden that, and that each of the eight colleges would get some money to be able to market and provide outreach at their own colleges and within their own regions. And then the remaining dollars would be given to each of the Southern Ag Center of Excellence and the Northern Ag Center of Excellence to be able to continue to develop and implement the online courses that would be offered again throughout all of the eight colleges that provide the farm business management program. So I'd appreciate your support.
And I just want to clarify for the record that Representative Poppy, is it the A19-0440 amendment is what you would like to move, correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry that I did not move that initially. Yes, that
okay.
is what I'd like to do.
Thank you very much. Is there discussion to this amendment? Seeing no discussion, Representative Poppy, will you please renew your amendment? And and members, I am supportive of this amendment.
I would renew the motion to approve the A19-0440 amendment to the A19-0412 amendment. That is the bill.
Okay. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Representative Lehman, we have your A7 amendment up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the H2544A9 amendment.
Okay. Okay, very good. I'm sorry, I have it wrong on my notes. I'll grab the right one this time.
Okay. Madam Chair, members, this relates to a new program that we heard about in committee, the Aspiring Minnesota Teachers of Color Scholarship Program. And this was a program for students that are in racial or ethnic groups that are underrepresented as teachers. And they need to be admitted and enrolled in a program. There's several different criteria that they must meet to be eligible for the program. And you might recall, I had a question. There was some discussion about one of the criteria, and that was that there be an adjusted gross family income of $125,000 or less. And I don't think we really received a satisfactory answer. It's kind of confusing, and I think most of us would look at that kind of jump out at us as a pretty healthy income for a family. So my amendment just simply eliminates that and eliminates the $125,000 number and keeps the requirement that the applicant demonstrate financial need. So what that means is the Office of Higher Education would define the financial need based on federal needs analysis in administering the program. Any questions? Happy to entertain.
I wanted to ask a question. Since we didn't hear about this, we didn't discuss this in committee, I don't believe, did we?
Madam Chair, we did.
Okay.
And when we had the people here that were testifying, I asked the question about the $125,000, how did we arrive at that? And then there was some discussion about, you know, if you have one family member at $125,000, does it meet that? You know, how many members do you have in the family? And there was some question and confusion about that. And so what my amendment does is, unless I can be convinced otherwise, I don't see a reason for having that number in this bill. I think that the Office of Higher Education can determine, based on their other criteria, their longstanding criteria, of who can demonstrate a financial need.
Representative Lehman, thank you for discussing that. And I see someone from Office of Higher Ed strolling down to the testifiers table. So if you could state your name and for the record and your affiliation, that would be great.
Certainly, Madam Chair, members, for the record, my name is Meredith Fergus. I'm the Manager of Financial Aid Research for the Office of Higher Education. Financial need is actually defined in state law, and it essentially models what the federal needs analysis formula is, meaning that we use the results from the FAFSA. So we would look at your total expenses as defined under federal cost of attendance, and then we would subtract out your expected family contribution plus any other grants or scholarships you receive. If the individual has remaining need after that, then they would be assessed to have financial need. It's a very kind of, it is the definition that is in state law, but it does not set a specific income cap, and it does take into account the family's income, assets, household size, and number in college.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And so what my amendment does is say that that is the procedure and the process that would be followed in determining eligibility.
Okay. Is there any other discussion? Okay, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And also, Representative Lucero had asked questions on this. And if you look at the presentation on January 16th that was given by the OHE on page 8. And there are some slides that sort of indicate, income and participation and and so, in effect, around the 125, things sort of just peter out. You know, that was a logical point to pick, but I think the main driver are the other parameters. And I think that I can understand why they grabbed the 125, but I think the general effects of if you need, that's about where it happens. So I think this just makes sure that it's need and those other definitions as opposed to arbitrary, oh, this looks like a arbitrary point. But we did have, I believe, about 13 and a half minutes of discussion on the topic.
Ms. Fergus.
Madam Chair, I did look up the statute reference. Financial need is defined in 136A.101, subdivision 5.
Okay. Could you repeat that again? I'm sorry.
Certainly. 136A.101, subdivision 5.
Okay. Okay. Well, ma'am, is there any further discussion? Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wonder if, I'm not sure if this is for the bill author or for the person from higher ed, but I'm just wondering if, is the intent or the effect of this that there are families who make over $125,000 who might qualify for this aid potentially if those other kind of when those other factors are taken into account? I guess that's a two-part question. Is that the intent of this, and is that the effect? So the first part would be
okay.
For
first, I'm going to go to Representative Lehman, then I'll go to Ms. Fergus.
Okay, Madam Chair, Representative Gomez. My intent is to avoid confusion. That's simply my intent. I was confused when I saw a number posted in there, and I think. In my mind, it's not necessary. I think that if they demonstrate financial need and we have a process in place, that should be sufficient. I'm just trying to avoid confusion.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Fergus, did you want to remark on that?
Madam Chair, Representative, it is possible that a family with an adjusted gross income of $125,000 could qualify. The caveat there is they would likely have a lot of children, so they would be a large household size, and they may have multiple children in college of whom one of them is applying for this program. So it is a possibility, yes.
Okay, Representative Gomez.
And is that the one substantive change that this amendment does, that it would potentially mean that a family who met certain criteria and made above $125,000 could apply or could qualify for this assistance.
Ms. Fergus.
Madam Chair, Representative, in my reading of the language, yes, that is the change. Yes.
Okay. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in listening to Ms. Fergus, I think actually taking the number out could actually increase the pool of people who might be able to qualify. For example, if you had a gross family income of $250,000 and had some extreme issue, you would then be able to qualify. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, that would be correct.
Thank you.
Okay. We thank you very much. I am. We've talked to the people that have brought this bill before us, and hearing from the comments from Ms. Representative Lehman, I am in support of this amendment. Is there further discussion? Representative Poppe.
Madam Chair, I would speak in opposition to this amendment. I think it adds confusion, and I think it also, as Representative Cleburne said, it increases the pool, and when the dollars are limited, it seems as though we're trying to reach the people that are most likely to need. This is a need-based request for a scholarship, and I would just respectfully say that I would speak against this amendment.
Representative Cleburne, did you comment?
Madam Chair, I would encourage a green vote on this amendment. It still you have to demonstrate financial need as outlined in the federal law. That's what Ms. Fergus just testified to. When I said it broadens the pool, you would have to have such an extreme hardship if you made more money. It does take the cap off, so it would open it, but you would still have to meet that hurdle of demonstrated financial need. I would encourage a green vote.
Okay. Representative Lehman.
Yeah, I guess I would request a roll call on this. And I'm hoping for support. I think that if we don't have a good enough process to demonstrate financial need, then we should probably look at the process. But, you know, I'm hoping that we have a good process in place that says that if this person really has financial need, they're eligible for this program. We're trying to increase a qualified pool of diverse teachers. And so I think that if you are demonstrating a financial need and you qualify, meet all the other criteria, you should be eligible.
Okay. Representative Jean.
Chair Bernardi, would it be okay if we have some of the advocates behind this bill? I know they've been working on this issue for many years now. Mr. Spies?
Yeah, Mr. Spies. I see him moving in the audience, and if you could come down and comment.
Madam Chair, members, Representative Zhang, the Coalition Increased Teachers of Color American Indian Teachers would support this amendment for the clarity purposes. The amount of money that is appropriated would not cover all of the teacher candidates that would be eligible. So there's going to be a competitive process, so to speak, in terms of the amount of financial need that somebody would have, and that process that the Office of Higher Education would oversee and administer would make sure that those applicants with the most financial need would receive the scholarship. So it's a clarity issue that would be fine. I would note that in the Senate, we had some eagerness from Republican senators to lower the amount to $100,000, but still an arbitrary distinction.
Madam Chair, if I could just respond to that, that's exactly the intent behind my you've put a number in there, it becomes a target and becomes debatable and it's arbitrary. I think that we need to trust the process. If we have a process to determine need, we should honor that process.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to lift up what the testifier said, which was that there are more candidates who will be eligible for this than there is money to give them. And so, to my thinking, it's important, you know, adding this, keeping this as it is allows us to target those who need it the most more effectively. And so to me, this kind of just adds another parameter to say, in the face of more need than we have to, than we have money to assist these folks, that we're going to really try to target this to those making less money who need it more. And so I'm going to oppose the amendment.
Okay, so is there further discussion? Members, I am support of this amendment, and was there, did you want to still request a roll call?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so there has been a roll call requested.
Chair Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Fryer?
Aye.
Representative Norton?
Aye.
Representative Daniels?
Aye.
Representative Franzen?
Aye.
Representative Gomez?
Oh, no.
Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Representative Lehman?
Aye.
Representative Lean?
No.
Representative Lilly?
No.
Representative Lucero?
Yes.
Representative Poppy?
No.
Representative Quam?
Aye.
Representative Runbeck?
Aye.
Representative Vang? Representative Wolgamott?
Aye.
Representative Zhang?
Aye.
Okay, there are 12 members that have voted aye, 4 nay, 1 is absent, and so the motion is adopted.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So do I need to further my motion?
Oh, right. I probably needed you to renew your motion. So we can back up. We don't need to. Okay, but thank you for checking. It's right. Always good to be double check.
Thank you for the good discussion.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so then we have Representative Run. Let's see, I believe it's 1 second. We are now on Representative Quams.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to move H2544A14. That amendment, and to discuss the amendment. Basically, this is meant for transparency and information, so that when a student declares a major, or a major and a minor, the student would receive information and statistics about that choice. So they would know sort of, job prospects, what the placement has been running, and what the general first year salary would be, just to help them not be surprised years later with what happens when they graduate and go into the job market.
Okay, so is there any discussion to this amendment? Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Quam. My youngest one, we have four children. They all graduated from college. My youngest one, until almost 5 years at Stout, and all along that process, he was never informed of the degree he was going to get, where that would lead him to. So he ended up with about $65,000 to $70,000 worth of student loans and a degree that couldn't get him a job except maybe in New York City and maybe in some place in California. So I'm 100% supportive of Representative Quam's amendment. I think that'll really help people that are in college, maybe change their path possibly in the last couple of years. But I do support it. And thank you, Representative Quam, for bringing that forward.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'm wondering if we could maybe have somebody come down from Minnesota State. As far as I know, we already are required to do this. At least it seems like students, when they click onto some information that it pops up, that they have to actually acknowledge that they have seen something that talks about the field of study and the placement rate for that. So I was just curious.
I see someone from Minnesota State coming down. Hello, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon. I'm Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mary Rothschild, and I'm the Senior System Director for Workforce Development at Minnesota State. And there are some differences between what we are required to do by the federal government under gainful employment and what this amendment would provide to our students. And I just want to explain maybe what some of those differences are. And I'm not an expert in gainful employment, but I do have the regulation here, and I'll do the best I can. First of all, the amendment expands dramatically what's already required under gainful employment. Gainful employment applies disclosure statements are applicable to certificate programs and diploma programs, including graduate certificates. The amendment would be inclusive of all degree programs, including the liberal arts, any associate or bachelor's degree apprentice. So we're really expanding quite dramatically the number of students who'd have to be advised about these employment opportunities in fields of study. A couple other points is the gainful employment is really about kind of comparing program costs what the graduate's debt level would be. So there's a financial advising component to gainful employment. So that isn't covered in that. And then the employment, related employment rate links the job description to an academic program. It's called a SIPSOC crosswalk. Just a couple of changes. In the amendment, it refers to job placement, which would be similar. Starting salaries, we don't actually collect those data, and the Department of Employment and Economic Development doesn't specifically have starting salaries. There's a pretty good proxy. It's about a 10% of the median wage, the 10% level, so it's a proxy. And employment trends is not something that we currently provide to students. We typically provide to them current employment opportunities, but trends would indicate some length of time, and that might be very difficult for us to get. So a lot of these data are not ones that we have direct access to through the employment Department of Employment and Economic Development, so we would have to have some data sharing agreements in order to get all of these data out to all of these students. So there'd be a very significant cost associated with this legislation to Minnesota State, but in general, of course, we comply with all the federal requirements around gainful employment. And, of course, we also try to advise students as best we can about any program choice. They do change majors a lot. So the language that says enter a specific program or field of study, student might get some advice, but then if they change majors, and students change majors a lot, that might be a little bit difficult to implement. So there's just some complications with the language of the bill.
Right. Okay. And then, thank you. Did you have follow up, Representative Cohen? Otherwise, I was going to call up. Well, no, we have an. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was Representative Poppy's question. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Do you have a follow up, Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just. I think that the intent is a good intent, because I think clearly students should be given as much information as possible. Of course, I would say that good advising and or counseling, if we had more faculty counselors and even MAPE advisors, we are able to provide more assistance to students. But I think some of this with the must do this and must do that, there is a cost to it, and I'm not sure if the outcome really is going to be the cost to benefit ratio is not necessarily going to be able to be the right ratio to prove that it benefits the students, as I think Representative Quam is intending.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Quam, I certainly appreciate your intent with this amendment. I think it is good. I mean, we need to be talking about this, just what sort of career opportunities are out there after graduation for students. You know, I really appreciate the conversation we've been having over the last 5 years or so around more technical training, career training, the two-year schools and things like that. But it sounds like the changes in this amendment are more substantial than we can do just through an amendment. I think this would be better as a bill so we could have some more conversation with the systems about this, just the cost, how they're going to get this information. And so, like I say, I certainly appreciate the intent. I just think that more deliberation and more work needs to be put into this idea in order for it to become law. But certainly appreciate what the point you're making and what you want to do here. So I guess at this time I would be opposed. Thank you.
Okay. So with that, any further discussion on the bill? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as it came out that basically this is done for a certain subgroup of our students instead of all of our students, I would beg to differ with the extreme cost, because frankly, I'm very familiar with multiple annually published salary studies that come out, and so the data is readily available. It's not like anyone couldn't Google search and probably find this for themselves, because I'm somewhat familiar, having done, I've managed teams and groups. I have also done hiring and other activities to where, I've been exposed, and you don't have to look deep. Frankly, that we would continue to perpetuate that only some people need to have this information. Frankly, all of our students ought to. And the easy accessibility of public information, and would make it not the horrendous, burdenous thing that maybe was painted by the testifier. And the intent is, public and private institutions. And frankly, our institutions ought to be able to tell their students, if I take this, what does it look like out there? And trending, frankly, you've got, the placement, if you're offering a program, you've got the placement information for the last 5 years. I mean, that's simple math. You probably don't even have to ask Surrey how to calculate. So I don't think it is as burdensome and as onerous as might be pictured. And I am confused by the desire that it's okay for a subgroup of students to be able to have this information, but not the general population of students who are making life decisions. And frankly, higher education is not an inexpensive endeavor. And therefore, our students ought to have as much information to make the appropriate choices and adjustments. And so we'll see what happens here, and I look forward to improving the content if needed.
Okay.
So I would renew my motion.
Okay, and Ms. Fergus, if you could come tell us, OHE's view on this, and what kind of, is there information that they already collect on this that would be helpful, and, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, we recognize Representative Quam's intent and are happy to let you know that actually the partnership between DEED and OHE as part of the SLEDS project actually does publish a lot of this information. It's actually available on DEED's website now. Mm-hmm. So we take the student-level records for each individual who is granted a certificate, diploma, or degree in Minnesota. We match them up with DEED's unemployment insurance wage detail records, and we publish how many of them are employed in Minnesota, what regions of the state they're employed in, what industries they're employed in, what their hourly wage rate is, and what their annual salary is at year 2 after graduation, year 3, year 4, year 5, and year 8. And we've done that for all graduates going back to 2007. That data is then distributed to our colleges. It is also distributed on DEED's via DEED's workforce centers. And similar information is found on Minn State's CareerWise site, as well as DEED's Career and Education Explorer tool. So we do have a wide variety of information that's available. The one exception would be job placement rates, and I believe we spoke about this the last time. We do not collect occupation data, or DEED does not collect occupation data in Minnesota. So we cannot tell you if they're working as a barista at Starbucks or if they're working in IT with an IT degree. We can get at it proxy-wise looking at salaries and industry, but we can't do it exactly without that critical piece of information. That said, we do agree with Ms. Rothschild in that the bill does require distribution of that information via colleges. So if we were to expand the distribution channels beyond what we currently do, there likely would be a cost to the colleges that are involved. Yes.
Okay. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I think that the intent is good, but as someone who has a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology, I could do everything from serve pizza to be a state legislator. So to kind of give a sense of what would be the job placement, what would be the starting salaries, I'm not sure if that, so somebody who's in a liberal arts track, it might be more difficult to actually be able to. So that's why I think part of this is that it is related to a specific program, then it makes sense to be able to say this is what the job market is and this is what the pay amount could be. But I'm just not sure if it can meet all of the criteria for every student who's going to be a graduate or going through a program. But I again agree that the intent is good, and I think that the idea behind it, trying to make sure that our students are making the best decisions with the most information is a good thing to do. And we all bear some of that responsibility, perhaps, if we are parents or if we are siblings or if we are people who are engaged in the topic of higher education. We want to make sure that our students are making the best and wisest decisions related to their own careers and their futures. But I'm thinking this just goes a step too far or a few steps too far. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Cleghorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree with Representative Poppy and Representative Lean. And I actually thank you, Representative Quam, for bringing this forward. It is when our students enter college, I think transparency is really important. And I think it's great to hear from Ms. Fergus how much data is actually available. But when I read the amendment, the question that came to my mind constantly is, how would this truly be implemented, and how many people would it take on each campus to implement this? Just thinking about my own three children who attended university and went on to graduate school, if when they changed their majors through the process, who would contact them? What would that contact look like? How many hours would it take? What would be the hold time between the time they click change major and enroll in classes? So just the walking me through the step-by-step process was lacking for me in the amendment, but I would be interested in working with you going forward to see how we could make this better and introduce it at a later time. But today I'm going to be voting against it, but I do think it's something that the transparency of it is a good idea.
Okay. Representative Cobb, do you have other remarks? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Basically, the thought that all the information is thrown a database at each of the schools, frankly, you've got the database. It's really easy to do the query and just build once, and you enter in this is the major, and the query pops it out so fast that you don't have to even really wait for the response, and it lists the information out. So the entire activity would be building a query that cross-referenced your listing or table of what the majors and the programs are and your database. I mean, we live in a technology era where the data's out there. It's a simple thing. But and the other part of the implementation, that's generally set up by the entities. The OHE would do, because we don't generally do all of the rulemaking and all of the minutia. I suppose we could do a 483-page document that would list all the databases involved, all the you know, major fields and et cetera, get down into what types of portal environments we wanted to do. But generally, we trust that the employees that we hire and pay to work for our citizens are capable and competent to be able to do a relatively simplistic type of you know, software portal.
Okay, and Representative Cleburne, you're the last person on the list, and I would like to make a comment.
This is just a quick follow-up. Yeah. And Representative Quam's answer to this question further clarified for me that this should be a no vote. He's talking about, in his answer, an extensive IT program that citizens could click onto. When I read the bill, and when I read the amendment, I thought he was talking about individual-to-individual conversation. So it is even more confusing to me now than in the beginning. And so, again, I will be voting no against this amendment. Thank you.
Okay, so I would just like to comment that I think the intent is very good, Representative Quam, and if there's any way in the interim to work on this and make it workable with all the stakeholders, that, like, I think your intent is not to have an unfunded mandate. I'm guessing, just knowing you, but that's just my guess. So I should take that off the record, but I know that's something I think that you value. Is that accurate? I don't want to speak for you, but you do. I don't want to get into your motives at all. So I'm going to retract that. But my point is, I think it'd be something good to work on to see if we can get something that's workable that would help serve students that was not an unfunded mandate. So thank you. So I encourage members to vote no on this amendment. Okay, so all those in favor signify by nope. We've got to renew the motion.
I will again renew the motion.
Okay, so Representative Quam will renew the motion to adopt House File 2544A14 amendment to the DE amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Representative Norness, now we have the A7 amendment.
That's right. So I'd like to move the A7 amendment and request a roll call. Also like to ask the pages if they could get a handout. If they can distribute that for me. Madam Chair, the A7 amendment increases the funding for the Minnesota Independence College and community. And that's, there was a House file earlier this session, House File 1844. MICC has created a successful educational model for students with autism and learning differences to reach their full potential. Graduates receive the education they need to live on their own, maintain meaningful employment, and have everyday independence. The request here is, there is $1 million, I believe, in your bill, and this changes that to $3 million. So it increases the funding for the MICC, and that actually would affect the Reconnect program. That's where the money would come from.
Okay.
In the interest of time, I do have a testifier. If you'd allow me to call a testifier.
I think we've already had a testimony on this a couple of occasions. I don't know that we need it today because we already know about it.
I have a testifier that's really looking forward to it. If you can allow for a moment or two.
Yeah, we can.
Otherwise, I'll talk longer.
Yeah, right. I will honor that request, Representative Norness. If the testifier could come down and speak for a couple, two minutes on this, that would be welcomed. Hello and welcome to the committee. State your name and your affiliation, please.
Madam Chair and members of committee. My name is Tyler Gomerick, a junior at Minnesota Independence College and Community. MICC is a college for students with autism and learning differences. Thank you for letting me speak today in support of this amendment from Representative Norm Ness. High school was not fun for me. I had a hard time focusing in classes, and I needed a lot of support with my homework, and it made it hard for me to make friends or enjoy time. After high school, my parents thought it was important for me to gain independence so I could get a job and live on my own. They did a ton of research, and lucky for me, they found MICC. Not everyone can go to a typical college. I need a place like MICC. MICC is changing my life. I'm learning the skills to live independently. I'm in the hospitality certificate program, and now I have friends that I have so much fun with. I'm in college, and that's pretty cool. I will graduate in the spring of 2020 and look forward to getting a paid job. MICC changes the life of every student who attends and makes our society better in Minnesota. I am so happy that Representative Normness is offering this amendment today to invest in MICC. With this funding, MICC can double enrollment to educate an increasing population of students with autism and learning differences. You can change more lives like mine by voting for this amendment. Please vote yes to help students like me who need a place like MICC to reach our full potential. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, for allowing him
to
testify.
Yeah, you're welcome. And Tyler, I didn't catch your last name.
Gomerick.
Gomerick. Okay, and congratulations on your upcoming graduation.
Thank you.
Thank you for testifying. Isn't there any further discussion on this amendment? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll speak to what it eliminates from the bill, which is the Minnesota Reconnect program. I know at Riverland Community College we do have we're able to be part of the pilot, and we do have an advisor that assists people who are nearing the end of a completion for a certificate or diploma degree and will be entering the workforce or perhaps getting strength to be able to get a different job within the workforce. So dealing with people who are sometimes underemployed, maybe not unemployed, but underemployed based on the fact that they've got some college already under their belt, but they need a little bit of a push, and for whatever reasons they've gotten to that point where they don't, they haven't completed that. So I have learned a lot about MICC. I'm glad that we were able to have the conversation in this committee. I've been away from this committee for a few years, and so I wasn't aware of this opportunity. And I will tell you that the city of Austin is an autism-friendly community, and I'm not sure if they know about this opportunity to send graduates to, and so I'm very happy to be able to provide some information to them and encourage more students. Maybe we can do something to be able to increase the numbers of students coming to MICC and be able to provide some additional support there. But I'm right now with this amendment, I'm speaking in support of the Minnesota Reconnect program as it currently exists in the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In addition to what Representative Poppy said, we do have base funding in the bill, still continuing base funding for MICC in the bill at $2 million over the biennium. So, I mean, I know MICC, it's a great program, and the students, the skills and improvements and better well-being that they're able to achieve through the program and move on to do bigger and better things in life, it's absolutely great. I just don't think we should eliminate funding for the Minnesota Reconnect in order to add to the base. Like I say, we do have base funding in the bill still for MICC, so I would oppose this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So February 14th, Valentine's Day, which was also the first time I got flowers from my other half in 7 years, so that was a very exciting day. But also on that exciting day was when Michael and Ben and Lisa, who is the parent of another student, Andrew, who could not make it that day, came into my office. And the energy level from the two students who spoke to me, Michael and Ben, was off the charts. We heard Michael speaking yesterday about his love for his job, working 50 hours a week, not because he has to, but because he wants to. He loves his job. Anyway, the energy level from those two gentlemen just really touched my heart. I have a gentleman that works on my campaign. His name is Matthew, and he also has autism. So autism, those that have it just have a special place in my heart. And sadly, we have an autism epidemic in this country, and it's one out of 59 that is diagnosed with autism, and that is 2018. And that is up 15% from the previous 2 years, which was one in 68. We need to do something that allows self-proficiency with those that have autism so that they can lead full, productive lives. And I believe that this program is that program. And when you can hear the students and their love for the school that they have, and for the independence that this school is teaching them, this is something that we should be investing in. And so, yes, I understand the concern of taking the money from another program, and funds are limited in our state. But truly, this is a group of individuals that are worthy of our tax dollars. And I don't cry very often in committee, but these are some of the most special angels on this earth, and they need to live a productive life as well. So thank you.
Representative Norness.
Chair Bernardi, I'm just thinking of trying to figure out a compromise. And is it possible to amend an amendment?
Let's ask our legal staff here. I mean, our research, House research staff.
My intent would be to change from $3 million to $2 million. So that does not eliminate the Reconnect program.
Madam Chair and members, so
Mr. Hopkins.
We have the delete all, everything amendment before the committee, and then we have the author's amendment. So this is an amendment to the delete everything amendment. An oral amendment to this amendment would technically be a second order amendment under House floor rules. That's not allowed. However, within committee, that sort of thing would be at the discretion of the chair. I would add that it would be a bit that the amendment currently eliminates the Reconnect program entirely. So if the goal of an oral amendment to this amendment was to preserve the Reconnect program and only shift some of its funding to MICC, it would be a bit more complex of an oral amendment. But anyway, whether or not that's permitted in committee at this stage is at the discretion of the chair.
Okay, Representative Norness?
Well, I'm just trying to be helpful, but I don't want to complicate it too much since I've been in your chair. I know what that's like. But I would like to do something for both programs, if possible. Mm-hmm. And I guess if not, we'll be on for another day, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's your call.
I don't feel comfortable doing it in this committee, mm-hmm. so it would be something that would need to wait if it were to happen. I wouldn't do it today, and I'm not saying I'm going to do it in the future either, okay. but it just won't happen in the committee today.
All right, that's
okay,
fine.
Thank you. Okay, so is there any further discussion? Would you like to renew your motion to, and there's a roll call requested too. Yep. And would you like to renew your motion, Representative?
Yes, Chair Bernardi, I'd like to move the A7 amendment.
Okay, to the DE amendment. Would please take the roll.
Chair Bernardi?
No.
Representative Pryor?
No.
Representative Nornes?
Yes.
Representative Daniels?
Yes.
Representative Franzen?
Yes.
Representative Gomez?
No.
Representative Cleavorn?
No.
Representative Lehman?
Yes.
Representative Lean?
No.
Representative Lilly?
No.
Representative Lucero?
Yes.
Representative Poppy?
No.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Runbeck?
Yes.
Representative Bang is absent. Representative Wolgamott?
No.
Representative Zhang?
No.
So with there are 7 ayes, 9 nays, and 1 absent, the motion does not prevail. Okay, so now we move on to Representative Runbeck's A1 amendment. Oh, there it is.
Thank you, Madam okay. Chair, and I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay.
It is asking of the two major systems that they take a look at how they might achieve a 10% reduction in administrative costs and identify those, you know, with specificity to the legislature a year from now. And I'm just looking at the fact that the budget proposes a 9.4% increase in funding. What we know is that these institutions have productivity gains that have occurred over the years through new technology. They've got new IT software, which should be producing greater productivity. That there are many. With the internal ways that can be greater efficiency can be achieved, eliminating excess functions, obsolete functions, merging programs, revamping majors. And I don't know if the institutions have been asked to do that, and maybe they do it on their own. But it does seem that when you aren't under a requirement to actually look internally and take a hard look at costs, sharpen the pencil, and you know, give the taxpayer the best benefit for the buck. That doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. And so it seems like the impetus would have to come from the legislature to put a hard and fast number on it and ask them to come up with that. So that's the amendment, members.
Okay. I am trying to find my A1 amendment. Does everyone have their A1 amendment? Okay, so I just want to have that in front of me. Okay, thank you. Okay, is there a discussion to this amendment? Okay, seeing no further discussion, I will say that I am opposed to this amendment, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Okay.
The motion does not prevail.
And Madam Chair, the A11, I'm not going to introduce. It's kind of a duplicate, actually.
And Representative Rumbeck, do you plan to do A12?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, I'll move the A12 amendment, and It would provide the dollars directly to the institutions to provide financial loan counselors that are available on campus to talk to students right in the places where they live and get their education and go to school and make these decisions. And it would, I guess, take those dollars from the Reconnect program. And the Reconnect program, it seems to me, is spending dollars to go out to reach students. They're marketing to students somehow. I'm not really sure exactly how the program works, but I'm feeling in this environment what students need most is the kind of direction from people who see, and just similar to the Quam Amendment, what kind of decisions are being made by the student, and, you know, the risk of making a bad decision, especially a bad financial decision, you know, has a lifetime of consequences. And the education institutions, to me, it is the responsibility of them to be providing the right information to those students to make sure that they're on a track that makes sense financially, academically, and at least have some intervention on campus with each of their students. I mean, that is obviously if the student is interested, but the fact that you would have folks on campus responsible to the student body, I think makes the institution more responsible to everybody, to their prospective students and their current students, parents, et cetera. And it seems to me to be a far better way and a far better way to spend money personally than the Reconnect program. So that's the amendment, members.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I speak in support of the Minnesota Reconnect program, but I'll also speak in opposition to the grants for on-campus loan counselors. Again, at the through the Minnesota State System, let me say this. You can take a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And sometimes students are not going to be I'd love for every student to be totally receptive, to be totally informed, to have a full understanding about the decisions they're making. But some students do that better than other students. And those of us who are at the college setting, the campus setting, need to reach out to those students and try to help guide them, inform them, support them, and make sure that they are making the best decisions they can. We perhaps, again, if they would hire counselors, not just financial loan counselors, but counselors to help provide students to students, I might be more supportive. But to find that we're going to, again, just do certified financial loan counselors, because I'm not sure even what that is or who that is. But so I guess I just speak in again in opposition to this.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have never been a stickler on the rules. Other smarter people usually jump on that before I do. But I wonder if the way this amendment is drafted, if it's in order. And I say that because it looks like the first year the buy-in limit would be $2 million. And the second year, it says 2.000000. So is that $2?
Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, it does appear to be a period, but I would imagine that was either a copying error or an error on our part. But I think, should the author want to make an oral amendment to insert a comma there and delete a period, that would probably fix the issue, should it be one. But I don't believe that was an intentional.
Madam Chair, it sounds like a friendly amendment. We'll accept.
Okay, so we have the Quama issue again. so you want?
Yeah,
Okay, so I'm being advised, and make sure this is okay, that if we do pass the amendment, that the technical changes could be made by staff. Is that accurate?
Madam Chair and members, yes, this is something that we would change if the amendment were to be adopted. It's pretty clearly a drafting error. And an oral amendment to fix such a small technical change would also be something that would be at the discretion of the chair.
Is that
very
okay?
Good.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
So any further discussion on this amendment? Okay, seeing no Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I also want to speak in favor of the Reconnect program that learning about the process of students that do have these student loans and the advising of them and the group that can't refinance a student loan as people that didn't finish their degree. So in a way, the Reconnect program is trying to reach out to some of the students that or former students that are most in need and that are potentially in suffering the most under debt. So I think that the money is well placed with Reconnect, and that this is a group of students that really need our help, or former students, I should say.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Rumbach.
So I'm reading who's eligible for the program, and it simply says these are students who are not behind in the payments of their loans. Mm-hmm. And so these are students who have made a choice to go into, they're probably working, obviously, then. If they're paying their loans, they're working, and they have decided on a different path. They're probably making very good decisions. So it seems to me it is a program more about serving the institutions as opposed to serving students and trying to make sure we're filling enough seats, you know, in the classroom. These students have made choices. We don't know that they aren't making good choices, and I wouldn't assume that they aren't. So to me, it's just not a program that makes enough sense, and I would say spending the money on campus where you can impact the student directly with services is a far better way to go.
Ms. Burgess, could we just get a clarification so that it's clear what the Reconnect, if it's marketing to students, or I mean, I understand it's actually serving students and like around 1,000 students or so, or more.
Madam Chair, Representatives, yes. Minnesota Reconnect is a program that does outreach directly to former students of the Minnesota state system. Essentially, we asked our colleges to go through their records and identify students who had left the college without a certificate or degree over the last 10 years. We then compared those students to see if they had enrolled at another college and completed their program. And so we actually did a mailing, an email mailing, as well as a postcard mailing, and we do social media marketing to those students directly, asking them if they would like an opportunity to come back and finish their certificate, associate degree, or diploma. In addition, they are assigned a primary counselor that works with them through the re-enrollment process, helps ensure that the credits they bring back with them either through work experience mm-hmm. or through prior classes are accepted by the college, and helps them lay out a pathway to degree or certificate completion in the shortest time possible. They then stay with the student as the student is enrolled at one of the four colleges and continues to help them navigate the system via financial aid, business office, student advising, or faculty and peer issues, and kind of helps them kind of make sure that they're overcoming barriers that they may encounter during their degree completion process.
Okay, thank you for that description. Representative Rumbach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Furcus, do you have results from the survey then that you did?
Ms. Burgess.
Madam Chair, Representative, we actually sent emails out to about 4,500 students this fall, of whom 174 did re-enroll with no financial incentive provided by the state. Five of them actually finished their degree in fall semester. The remaining students are still enrolled in spring, with new students also starting this spring and some continuing this summer. in terms of the barriers, our navigators, we haven't done a formal survey of the students, but our navigators have indicated that students are encountering issues with credit transfer. They also need some assistance ensuring prior learning assessment goes through, be it a portfolio. They've also encountered some financial barriers. Some of them do have defaulted student loans, and they can get some assistance in understanding the process for that, or if they failed to meet academic progress, they can help, the staff at the college can help them kind of get back on track for completion.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, okay. And thank you, Ms. Furcus. I guess I still have questions about the expenditure of $2 million and, you know, I mean, email contact seems to be generating responses, and it seems like it could be a pretty efficient program run just within and with existing dollars.
Any further discussion to the amendment? Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just want to share a little about how this has impacted my life. My partner completed maybe like a year and a half or 2 years of college, and so we're like $18,000, $19,000 in debt because of it, and he does not have a degree. And we talk a lot about student loan debt, and it's, you know, it's a huge problem. It's a huge burden on people. Like, I'm in my late 30s. He's in his early 40s, and you know, between the two of us, we're paying like about $500 a month in student loan repayment. I have a degree and he doesn't, though. And so that makes a real difference. So he's actually like working in the field that he started his studies in. But, you know, if we could figure out a way to get him back in school, he would be able to pay that off way quicker. And so I feel like this is sort of this kind of like hidden part of the student loan debt crisis that we're facing, and it has a really deep impact on families. You know, we have a kid, and we rent. We can't afford to buy a house in our neighborhood, and in part it's because, you know, probably if we didn't have that student loan, we'd be in that spot, you know, where we could like get a yard for my kid, for my 6-year-old to play in, and not be living in an apartment, you know, but we have to deal with that first. And so I guess, again, you know, like, we do have a lot of conversations about student debt, but I think this gets a little hidden in that conversation. So I'm really glad to see this program. You know, for us, it was quite some time ago, and he's not from Minnesota originally, so we've just had trouble kind of like getting the information from the school he went to, getting the transfers done, kind of like figuring out what counts for what. So having this assistance for people who, a lot of whom, like you say, you know, are out there, are working, are trying to pay off their debt, but without that credential, like, the burden of the debt is that much more than for the rest of us who have debt and have a credential. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Furcus.
Madam Chair and Representative, I would echo those statements. We do find that actually when it comes to student loan defaulters, that those who can obtain full-time employment at a livable wage are much more likely to repay their loans and stay out of default and delinquency than individuals who do not complete their program. In addition, the vast majority of funding for the Minnesota Reconnect program is direct funds to the student. They do receive a scholarship of $1,000 per semester for up to 3 semesters a year, which essentially would provide 2 classes for free on that degree pathway. In addition, it does provide for the academic counseling staff, so there are some funds to the colleges directly, both for outreach as well as academic counseling, and to pay off financial holds for students who may have small unpaid bills at their college before they return.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, I would like, Representative Rumbeck, would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll renew the motion for the amendment for A-12.
Amendment to the DE amendment.
DE, okay.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Rumbeck. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Okay, so seeing no further amendments to the A19-0412 DE amendment, We will vote on the A19-0412 DE amendment as amended. This is not the final vote on the bill. Want to make sure you all know that. This is getting in the order. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. The, okay, group. Those opposed? Okay. The motion does prevail. Okay, so House File 2544 as amended is now before us. Any further discussion? I just wanted to encourage members to support this bill. We work. Oh, did you have no? Go ahead. Did you want to? No, you can.
No.
I would love for you to. Did you want to say something, Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a great bill.
Okay, so I'd encourage your support for this motion. And I move the House File 2544 as amended be referred to the Ways and Means Committee and that staff be directed to make any technical corrections as necessary. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No.
The motion prevails and House 2544 as amended is on the way to Ways and Means. The meeting is adjourned.